1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century look at history's greatest rock albums. I'm Redbeard. 25 years ago in the studio, the whole world discovered that REM was out of time.
It's very descriptive. I mean, it gets the point across, you know, something that has caused you such shock that it threatens to overturn all of your spiritual convictions. You know, that's a pretty big shock to your system.
That's a pretty big shock.
So it's a very strong phrase.
Shiny, happy people holding hands.
Shiny, happy people holding hands.
Shiny, happy people holding.
We did Green, which was kind of like a big record, big drum sounds, big guitar sounds, even the acoustic stuff sounded kind of big, you know. And we kind of wanted to make a little bit more human sounding record. We talked about strings on the tour and saying, gee, wouldn't it be nice to use a lot of wood instruments, acoustic instruments.
Hi, this is Mike Mills.
Hi, this is Peter Buck of REM in the studio.
If you were fortunate in 1983 to discover the first full-length album, Murmur, from Athens, Georgia-based REM, you probably realized that it sounded unlike anything else at the time, and precious little ever since, except maybe their follow-up, Reckoning. Over the next 4 years and five albums on indie label IRS, Michael Stipe, Peter Buck, Mike Mills, and Bill Berry made some of the smartest, quirky, angular rock of any American band. Largely on the popularity of the song The One I Love from 1987's Document, REM jumped ship to label Warner Brothers Records and recorded the top-notch rocker Green in 1988. But for 1991's Out of Time album, the band did a rethink, returning in many ways to the more intimate approach of instrumentation and arrangements of those two earliest albums, but utilizing strings on several songs. Any serious list of songs of the decade, you know, those universally acclaimed recordings which at once define the times in which they were written and released, yet are timeless in their never-ending appeal. Any list like that has to include Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Water for the 70s, Every Breath You Take by The Police for the 80s, and for the 90s, REM's Losing My Religion from 1991's Out of Time. Guitarist Peter Buck and bass player vocalist Mike Mills explain why they decided not to tour in 1991 when this album came out. Mike answers first.
We didn't want to, basically. I mean, as to put it bluntly, but we were out for so long in 1989. We did about 135 shows in 17 different countries and pretty much used up all the touring energy we had at that point, because if we went back out now, it would be, I wouldn't want to go give a half-assed performance, you know, and kind of cheat people out of their money, basically, which is what it would be. So we decided to wait until we were really excited about touring and ready to go out and be able to give a really good show when we went out.
Was there any consideration at all in that decision with the types of arrangements and the types of songs that we're finding on Out of Time? Would these be, there? Some of them are moody, melancholy. The arrangements certainly are new for REM. Would they be harder to pull off?
No, we've been playing acoustic shows for radio and television and stuff.
You shouldn't have told me that. No,
well, not
told
us
me
too.
That.
I mean,
I'll send somebody out to the car.
Porter, hey, Porter. We try to have all four of the band members present if we do that. But we find that if the songs are good, and you know, we like to think that most of ours are, then they'll kind of stand on their own. You know, the best song is one that you can play on one guitar around a campfire.
I agree.
So
I agree.
You know, so all the embellishments that you hear on the record, you won't miss them in a live show because you've got the visual thing, and you just don't miss all the strings and things that you won't hear. So
when we wrote the songs, and the way we recorded it is that the four of us plus Peter Halsapple playing live in the studio, and the strings were added. You know, we knew we had parts written, but they weren't necessarily, you know, they definitely weren't there when we were recording. They sounded fine without the strings. I mean, those are live recordings with some strings added.
Near Wild Heaven from REM's Out of Time features bass player Mike Mills on vocals that at time evoke everybody from Brian Wilson's Beach Boys to Spanky and Our Gang. Guitarist Peter Buck explained the shift from the Green album's bombast to the more jangly, intimate sound on Out of Time.
We did Green, which was kind of like a big record. I mean, big drum sounds, big guitar sounds, even the acoustic stuff sounded kind of big, you know. And we kind of wanted to make a little bit more human sounding record. We talked about strings on the tour and saying, gee, wouldn't it be nice to use a lot of wood instruments, acoustic instruments. And so while we were writing, you know, I kept a little notebook of, you know, before we have titles, it's like, well, there's the fast one, then there's the new fast one, then there's the slow one, and then there's the one in three-quarter time. And someone would go, gee, why don't we put cellos here? So then I'd write, you know, new song, cellos at bridge, that kind of thing. And by the time we kind of got the songs worked out, I had two or three pages of notes for possible string ideas. It was just, while we were creating these things, it seemed logical.
We were very fortunate, too, that we'd gotten to know Mark Bingham, who arranged most of the strings on this record, because we'd never worked with a nine-piece symphony string section before. And if I had had to write out the charts, it would have taken me about 6 years. So we were really fortunate that we got him. He did a wonderful job, and he came up with some of the most amazing string parts I've ever heard.
It's just icing on a wonderful cake that y'all baked.
When the time came to compose, found the band's members calling an audible at the line of scrimmage, creatively speaking, according to Mike Mills and Peter Buck.
We walked in there and we took a look at the bass and the electric guitar and the drums and the same one we'd seen every day for the last 11 months. So we said, well, let's try something different. So we sat around in a little circle and Peter played mandolin and I would play the organ and Bill would play bass or electric guitar, I mean acoustic guitar. And, you know, it was a lot more organic way to write songs than trying to shout at each other over 120 dB of electric guitar. Plus, you write different songs. You get a lot warmer sound. A more intimate sound. When you write on a mandolin, you don't write big crashing guitar songs because it's impossible. So we got a little more of a softer sound on some of these songs because we wrote them like that.
Well, now Peter did. I don't play anything, so, and particularly nothing with strings. But did you just pick up the mandolin one day and you could play it, or is it considerably different from the six string guitar?
I don't know. If you could find your way around a guitar, you could find your way around a mandolin.
Really?
I'm not really competent on mandolin, although I'm working it. I'm taking lessons and stuff. But I actually found one in New York and I just liked the shape of it. It was this Italian mandolin and it was just very odd looking and it was cheap. And I went, well, I'll buy that and I'll tune it up and see what happens. And you know, I use it as a writing tool more than anything else. I don't think I could really sit in with someone else on mandolin. But for writing my own songs, it's great because you just kind of come up with things that you wouldn't normally come up with. I tend to wander into keys that I wouldn't play in. And I use F all the time in mandolin. I never write songs in F on guitar.
Huh.
It's just F is a fun key on mandolin. It's really not a fun key on guitar. It's really nice, too, because I guess the inclination would have been to write a real huge hooky chorus with, you know, and instead Michael went, well, I've got this thing that I want to sing at the chorus, and it's not really a hook. I went, well, that's fine, you know.
Yeah, because it's weird because the chorus isn't really that much different from the rest of the song, vocally at least.
I guess.
The melody.
Yeah.
But it works.
Yeah. Oh, it really works.
Sometimes you have to sit down and decide, well, do you want to really go for the throat and just fill this thing with hooks, or should it just be the song and not? I mean, that's really a simple track. It's basically it's a live track with mandolin and acoustic guitar, bass and drums live, none overdubbed, and then just the strings and the vocals were added.
Mm. The first time you heard the turn of that phrase, losing my religion, I mean, did that hit you as hard right between the eyes and ears as it did me? I mean, we could sit and theorize on that for a week.
Well, it's very descriptive. I mean, it gets the point across, you know, something that has caused you such shock that it threatens to overturn all of your spiritual convictions. You know, that's a pretty big shock
to
your system.
That's a pretty big
shock. So it's a very strong phrase.
That was Peter Buck and Mike Mills of REM describing Losing My Religion. And they'll be joined next by lyricist and lead singer Michael Stipe. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with the members of REM in the studio for the 25th anniversary of the U.S. number one seller, Out of Time.
Hi, this is Mike Mills, and you're just in time for the best of REM.
Hi, this is Peter Buck of REM, in the studio.
Hi, this is Michael Stipe, in the studio.
Thanks, guys. I'm Redbeard. REM's song from 1991's Out of Time, called Losing My Religion, became such a big international favorite that here, 25 years later, it's being inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame for 2017. Coming from an album titled with the anachronism Out of Time, REM lead singer and lyricist Michael Stipe is as surprised as anyone that time has not diminished the fervor for Losing My Religion.
Yeah, pop culture, particularly in the U.S., comes and goes, and everything moves in cycles as things do, which we all realize as we grow older and wiser, whether it's politics or pop culture or music or what have you, people's taste, radio. Where we never, I would argue, never made giant steps to make ourselves a viable hit-making American band for American radio. Radio came to us, and to my count, probably three times in 23 years. Pop culture just swung into our little stubborn trajectory, and we were in the same orbit a couple times. The most clear and obvious time would be Losing My Religion, where we wrote a song that didn't have a chorus and had a mandolin as a lead instrument, and for some reason captured the imagination of just about every single person who was breathing on this earth. And that's not a standard that I think wisely you could hold yourself up to for whatever song you put out next or whatever record you put out next. To attempt to do that, I think probably would have been the death of this band, or certainly the creative kind of death of this band. And so we kind of merrily went along our stubborn little route. And in doing so, you know, American pop culture moved in a very different direction. And I think the ways, and again, we're back to distribution, the ways that the people who are not music fans and go out and seek music, the way that they hear it or become aware of it is mostly through radio and television. It went off on its little path, and we went off on our little path. Our little path happened to take in a big chunk of the world. And there's a lot of people out there for whom REM didn't mean a whole lot in the 1980s. But suddenly, with Losing My Religion, here was a band that had been around for some time, had a pretty good catalog of music, and had a lot of promise. And that's the path that we took. That's the direction that it went in. No regrets.
Half a world away, this REM album Out of Time was introducing the quartet from Athens, Georgia, to millions in summer 1991. It was about that same time that guitarist-songwriter Peter Buck made headlines with his pronouncement that, quote, all sorts of popular music are dead. Peter elaborates with me in the studio.
What I meant was that media tends to suck things up so quickly that, like, in 1956, rock and roll was weird, and it was still weird in 1961 because it was, you know, it was dangerous, it was scary. You know, rap music has been around. You're seeing commercials and, you know, selling Sprite and McDonald's. And that tends to take away a lot of the power and immediacy. But, you know, a really good artist can take any foreign music and turn it into something exciting. I mean, the Marcellus Brothers are kind of reinventing the 50s, you know. And if you'd asked a jazz fan 10 years ago, well, do you think cool jazz is going to be really in? And no one would have thought that. But they're managing to, you know, breathe life into it. You know, just the same as a good band can do to rock and roll. Neil Young does it. Sonic Youth does it. We do it.
You mentioned Neil Young. The song Country Feedback on this Out of Time, that could have come off of American Stars and Bars in 1976 or 77.
You know, I think the guitar is kind of similar to stuff that he does. I'm not a very fast guitar player, and neither is he. I don't think you really need to be fast. That's just kind of turn up to 11 and start whacking at it, you know. And I don't really follow the structure of the song. Sometimes I play a melody. Sometimes I play a harmony. Sometimes I just make noise.
That's what Neil does.
Yeah, but he's one of my favorite guitar players, and you just never know what he's going to do. I mean, you know, his solos sometimes don't make total sense in the song. Sometimes it's just like, what is he thinking of? And that's what you like about soloing guitars, is that air of kind of mystery and excitement. What's coming next? I mean, most bands, when they come for the solo, I mean, you can just about sketch it out on a graph.
Yeah, yeah. You can sing high, Mike, but I don't think that was your voice on the duet there. Who was that?
Kate Pearson, very lovely lady, good friend of ours, and probably one of the best rock and roll singers in the country today.
Boy, so says everybody, right?
Well, yeah, then they would be
Iggy
right.
Pop, you know, she's been working with the Bees for years, and because they're kind of a little wacky, I think people tended to not really think of them as seriously being able to play or, you know, I mean, she's just an amazing singer. She just we had her in the studio, and she just nailed it immediately.
Yeah, Cindy Wilson's a good singer, and Keith Strickland is a great guitar player. You know, their musicianship tends to get overlooked amid all the zany hairdo and clothing and stuff.
Much like the Korean and Vietnamese wars prior, it's time indeed that will allow us to determine the wisdom or recklessness of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. But REM bass player Mike Mills feels that it would not have been possible without at least tacit complicity by some elements of the press.
But it's also an indictment of the media, because to us, one of the primary jobs of a free press is to keep an eye on the government and question what they do, especially when what they're doing is something like invading a foreign country. You know, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, it doesn't matter. It's the job of the media to hold them in check and make them answer for their actions, and it's not happening. Bush got a free ride from the media, which is taking a frightening lurch to the right in America anyway. But their utter acquiescence to every bit of propaganda that was put out by the White House, with nobody asking any hard questions until recently. And to me, it's just appalling that they were able to get away with everything they did with nobody asking why.
Why would a post-Watergate press do that? Why do you think?
Well, I think Bush got a big free ride because of 9/11, and he knows it. I mean, I think they used that to advance a broader agenda. I do believe that. I could get in trouble for saying that, but the fact is, that's what I believe. And it seems pretty obvious to me that there was no correct connection between Iraq and 9/11, none whatsoever. And yet. They never quite came out and said that, but they certainly implied that, and certainly everyone assumed, well, if we're going to be invading them, there must be a reason. Therefore, they must have had something to do with 9/11, because why else would we be invading? So it's I think that they just they knowingly used that. I do, and I find it reprehensible at best.
A terrific propulsive bass line and lead vocal by Mike Mills is featured on Texarkana by REM from the album Out of Time. Here's Mike and Peter Buck.
And the title has nothing to do with the song. It's actually a great story. When we were working on it, we had the backing track kind of done, and Michael was trying to write lyrics, and all he could come up with was the chorus, and the chorus was
Winterville to Texarkana.
Winterville, yeah, that's one. That's
where's that county line or something? So, but that's all he could come up with. So we were about to bag the song. I said, "Well, I've got an idea. Let me just see what this sounds like in the verse." So I went in and sang it, and Michael thought it was good. So we just kind of ran with it, and I tried to change the title to something that had something else to do with the rest of the words, and nothing would stick, so we kept the
Texarkana. And, you know, Texarkana is a great evocative name. I mean, ZZ Top should have a song called Texarkana.
You're right.
I'm surprised they don't. Maybe they do.
Or they will.
I think I've got all their records. I'm pretty sure they don't.
Still to come, Michael Stipe reminds us that Hit Happens. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online 24/7 at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Mike Mills, Peter Buck, and Michael Stipe in the studio for the 25th anniversary of REM's Out of Time.
Hi, this is Mike Mills, and you're just in time for the best of REM.
Hi, this is Peter Buck of REM in the studio.
Hi, this is Michael Stipe in the studio.
Again, it's a pleasure, gentlemen. I'm Redbeard, and there is certainly no need to hype REM's Out of Time from this 25th anniversary vantage point when the facts do all the talking. The album hit number one sales in the U.S. It sold in excess of 10 million here alone. It garnered 3 Grammy Awards and is one of 3 albums by REM on Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 of all time, largely on the strength of the hit Losing My Religion. But REM lead singer Michael Stipe reminds us that worldwide success of one mega hit raises the expectations bar often to unrealistic and unfair heights.
It's not really something you can manufacture or create. You know, that stuff just happens. I had always wanted to have a song that would be considered the song of the summer. As it was, that song kind of became the song of the year, I think. It really did kind of take off. Well, I don't know. That's not for me to say, certainly, but thank you for what you said. You can't create the kind of environment where something like that could happen. I think a lot of people try to, and you wind up with kind of substandard, forgettable stuff that's really written for very different reasons than why we write what we write, and or at least we try to write what we write. So if we chose Losing My Religion as the standard by which all other singles would be released, then we'd be really kind of screwing ourselves in the head, certainly. And I think cutting ourselves and our audience short of the potential that we have as songwriters and as a group. It didn't take a real long time to figure that out, that it was a fluke. It was a complete fluke. And I'm really happy it happened. But I'm not necessarily looking for it to happen again.
Me in Honey from REM's Out of Time again features the distinctive harmonies of B-52 Kate Pearson. Young people who think that activist movements like Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, and Standing Rock are 21st century inventions need to look back to Out of Time's release, when REM championed the Motor Voter registration drive and tied it brilliantly into a green environmental effort to do away with the old compact disc long box package. Peter Buck and Mike Mills put their music where their mouth is.
so many teenagers don't vote. I mean, I was kind of shocked. I registered, you know, the minute I was able to vote. And sometimes I don't vote, but, you know, I choose not to vote in some elections because I don't like the candidates. But 17% of people between the ages of 18 and 26 are registered to vote. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And I think that, I mean, hell, I think the kids should you know, I mean, take over the world. You know, I'm no longer a kid, but, you know, I mean, we haven't done such a great job. I think all the 18-year-olds ought to get out and vote and, you know.
Give them a crack at it.
Yeah. Yep, and this would make it easier. As it is, you know, if you live in a small town, it's easy to register. But if you live in New York or even Dallas, you know, you have to take a day off work and go wait in line. You have to have a permanent address. You know, it's things that 18-year-olds aren't really good at. You know, I mean, you have to have a phone, all this kind of stuff. You can't move. I think voting should be a right rather than something that you have to work at. And I think it's kind of pathetic that you have local elections where 30% of the people that are registered vote and probably only 50% of the people who are able or registered.
What actual thing has REM done to get people involved in this motor voter registration type thing? I mean, is there any like an address on your CD or
absolutely?
What?
Well, when we realized we were going to be stuck with the CD long box because there at this point there's no viable alternative for the long box, we decided to use some of that cardboard by putting a postcard on the back that you can fill out and mail in to a central clearinghouse, and they get them all together and send them to congressmen to urge passage of the Motor Voter Act. And I know that Warner Brothers or the people that received these got 10,000 of them in the first week.
Whoa!
So, you know, not only are we saving cardboard, but we're trying to get, you know, a fairly good law passed.
That was an excellent idea.
Yeah. Yep.
Very
you know,
smart.
Since, yeah, like Mike said, since we're stuck with that kind of semi-evil thing, the long box, total waste of cardboard and trees and everything, might as well utilize it somehow. And I like the idea that, you know, just through some rock and roll band that people in the government are getting a really swift kick in the butt. I mean, I think that they'll be surprised, you know, if they get 30 or 40,000 cards just off one record. You know, it's because I don't think that people in government really think about teenagers and young adults as someone they have to worry about. And I think they probably should.
The atmospheric beauty and tension in REM's Low on the 25th anniversary year of Out of Time. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, Michael Stipe, Peter Buck, and Mike Mills. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.